amplify the signal by liking, subscribing, commenting, and sharing this video. Let's get started.
Where are you right now? Are you in Chicagoland?
Yes, I'm in Chicago. You're awesome. In Illinois too?
I am. We moved to Illinois from Detroit in 2008.
Okay.
So we're also down in Florida playing snowbirds. So whereabouts are you?
I'm in the suburbs of Chicago, where we're having our meetup soon.
Nice. Oh, that's right.
Welcome to the Bitcoin Nova. Today, I have Mel with me. She is the creator and producer of the Bitcoin Boomers podcast. So thank you so much for joining me today, Mel. And thank you for joining the panel with Joe Bryan.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you were on the Bitcoin Sessions podcast.
So the Bitcoin Boomers podcast lives on the BTC Sessions channel.
I got you. Okay.
Now I'm working on their Noster account. Fountain, you know, getting accounts everywhere, you know, where we can start to spread the word. And now that we've got some content that's starting to come out, it will be easier to work on it. So that's my job now, is to get it out everywhere.
Okay. So it lives on Bitcoin Sessions channel.
Mm-hmm. But like, I'm going to do its own little YouTube clips, you know, channel, and its own Instagram, and it's got its own Twitter, and it's got everything else, you know, on its own. But we decided to do it there because Ben has such a big following, and he's also got all those tutorials. So it, his producers and everything edit it, and I actually am the producer. So, but I don't do the editing, I just do the during the show part. So, as you may know, probably do, that having a podcast is not that easy. There's a lot to go with it. So we've actually recorded three episodes. The first episode was kind of boring, and we kind of decided not to use it and move into the second one, because I do think there's things that have to be established now, I'm learning, like, ahead of time. So feel free to give me any advice on that, because like, they're actually, okay, so the Bitcoin Boomers are, these are the smartest guys I know, but so far it's them talking to each other, which is great for us, but is it great for somebody new? You know what I mean? Like, we love it because we love all of their insights and all of their little nuances, but I've got to start gearing some of the content towards people who need it and will trust these voices, because that's the point.
So is it a group, a panel of certain people that are speaking to someone new every time, or who's actually on the show hosting?
So Larry Lepar is one of the hosts, Bob Burnett, and Gary Leland. And so our first guest was George Bodine. He was great. Our second guest was Dr. Bob Murphy, who's a big economist. And then in December, we're going to have Gary Cardone. And I think Max Kaiser in January.
With starting it off, it's great to have these big names and people that understand Bitcoin.
Sure.
Because, I mean, Larry has a great way of explaining the problem because he wrote The Big Print. So he really can relate to people and teach them. And he has a history, like, background to where he came from and why that hurts families. Even when you think about boomers, a lot of times people have the idea that they're well off and they're, you know, they won the game, you know, but not all of them did. A lot of them got hurt by the game. You know, and I think having them relate to people with some of those stories, because not everybody did great because they're a boomer. You know, a lot of people got wrecked, and their businesses got wrecked. They've lost homes. They worked hard. They did everything they were supposed to.
Yeah, my mom, like, I love all these posts about food stamps and, like, this kind of skepticism that goes with that. Like, oh, they don't really need that. And to look at my mom again, she's 75. She gets, I think, $998 in Social Security a month. Works about 10 hours a week still. We can't get her any kind of assistance or help for anything. So like if she makes too much money to get even SNAP or food stamps, like I don't know how people are doing it with a seven. Mm-hmm. I saw a $7.39 box of Special K yesterday. Special wow. K with strawberries. $7.39.
I'm Jesus like, crazy.
How is a family of three, you know, family of five supposed to live?
Right.
I don't get it.
Yeah. And that's why you think that, like, when you think of these younger generations and why people wait longer to have kids and why we have population decline, it's like, how would you be comfortable bringing life into this world when you're afraid to even support yourself or don't know how to move ahead on your own? With massive debt, student loans, you know, you think you have a good job, but it doesn't make your ends meet. And the older people that should be doing well in life, they've worked hard all their life, are barely getting by. You know, it's scary. You know, it's scary to think for your parents that did everything right. And that's why probably a lot of us found Bitcoin, because when you look at, you know, older generations that aren't well off, that's why it converted a lot of us, or to try to look for an answer so we don't end up in the same situation. So I think having a lot of these Bitcoin boomers talking has to be somewhat in a relatable way to maybe reach people like us in our age group that have parents who aren't rich and didn't win at the real estate game and the stock market game. The people that thought they could save money and work hard that got screwed over by the system, instead of just the ones who, like, you know, the Gary Cardones or the people that did really well. But there's so many people who didn't do those things and didn't right. find, you know, didn't ride that train or I don't know. They worked hard, but in a different way. You know, they didn't invest. They didn't.
Look at the ages. All right. So you've got the youngest boomer is 60. All right. And the oldest boomer is, I think, 80, 79 or 80. Now you have you have 20 years there. And let's say you're loaded, okay? You're 79 and you've got $15 million in the bank. Well, do you think you need Bitcoin? No, you do not. You do not think you need Bitcoin, and you're not messing with your investments. You're just not. And that is what I'm hearing over and over again. Right. But when you get to that 60-year-old, all right, who has money, but that person needs Bitcoin because the money that, like, let's say they've got $15 million. Well, where's that? What's that going to be worth in 20 years?
I wonder how much a percentage of boomers, like people over 60, people over 70, like the different percentages of people who are even in the $1 million range and who are not, like how much percent of the population could you reach because they are also doing well and don't think they need Bitcoin? And how much of them, is there a way bigger percentage of boomers who are in, who are struggling, who don't even have the $15 million or the $1 million?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I want to start with the people like Bob, Larry, and Gary all had great fiat careers. And I wanted to show them why they decided to put their wealth in Bitcoin.
Even though they are doing okay.
Even though they did great, they didn't have to do this. There's no reason for them to do this. But they did. And I want people to know why.
Yes. And that's why I think it's a good way to start, you know, start the show with those types of people, you know, for sure. To show that, yeah, I think that's great. I think that's smart.
So we're starting there. And then I'm going to move into 20 questions with so-and-so. You know, 20 questions with Bob, 20 questions with Larry. Boomer to boomer, where if there's boomer, people have questions, they can ask. So I'm going to start that with my dad. And he's already given me a nice long list. Like his biggest thing that he cannot believe for the life of him is that there will only ever be 21 million coins. He just does not believe that.
I'm like, right.
Okay. So I need someone to explain to him why. And so like he has this, oh God. And then here's the other thing that I keep hearing. What does Trump have to do with it?
Yeah.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Like Bitcoin was here way before Trump. And then he wants to know how the Trump coin is related to Bitcoin.
I'm excited to announce my new website, bitcoinnova.store, for clothing, accessories, and even pieces with a QR code so you can amplify the Bitcoin Nova signal and bring more people to the channel to learn about Bitcoin. You'll also find playlists from this channel and from the Hive Minded channel, the projects I support, including bitcoinblacksheep.com, affiliate links, and everything Nova related, all in one place. And don't forget to check out illinoisbitcoincouncil.org. $50 in fiat or sats goes a long way to paint Illinois orange. The greater the nodes, the stronger the network.
I'm like, oh, for the love of God, this is not a, this was a little wrench. That doesn't help anything. I know there's a lot of Trump lovers in our space, but the man created a shit coin. Okay. He created a shit coin, his own game.
And you know what could be cool? Maybe instead of every single person, I don't know, it'd almost be cool to like cut away every time someone says something like that and just say like a super short somehow explanation of
like one of those little boxes that says warning.
Like Bitcoin is different because it is unchangeable. No one can print more of it, period. Ultimate scarcity, nothing is like it. Like just like almost like a disclaimer to be like every time, remember this.
Bitcoin is a meme coin. That means it doesn't do anything and you're buying it to support Trump.
Yeah.
That's it.
And the thing is, I hear when people talk about Trump and what does Trump mean for Bitcoin, it says, I mean, the idea for me is talking to people around the world, whether Trump, Biden, whoever the administration is good or bad for Bitcoin, doesn't matter. The rest of the world needs Bitcoin. Because their currency is being destroyed. So it doesn't matter what Trump or any other administration does here in America, the rest of the world needs it because their currencies are also getting inflated away. And people are, you know, so really, it's just politics in America, but doesn't matter for the rest of the world.
No, but it matters here because I feel like everyone needs it and they need to know that it doesn't have anything to do with Trump. Like, Trump didn't make this. He didn't have anything to do with this. He unfortunately saw an opportunity and he took it. And but that doesn't mean that Bitcoin has anything to do with any meme coin.
Well, these Bitcoin treasury companies also came out before Trump.
Yeah, well, Michael Saylor he's been around. So, I mean, I don't fully know if I get what Saylor's doing and it seems to be working for him. Have you stopped to think about the rest of them? Like, do you think it's the same thing? I'm not sure. I haven't put much brain power into it yet.
What I think about those treasury companies is I like to think of it in a way where everyone that owns Bitcoin is technically having a treasury of their own that they're building. So every company, every family needs a treasury.
Fair.
Of their own. So everyone is building a treasury. Everyone should build a treasury in a way. But everyone who invests in these treasury companies, I just wonder, one thing I think that's positive about it is for all the boomers who have their money stuck in traditional finance, who, you know, they have their 401k, they've built up all their life, that they would like to get exposure to Bitcoin. But if they were to sell what they have built or what they have stuck in a 401k, or the traditional system, they would have to take a huge tax hit to go buy actual Bitcoin. So I think it's a good way to siphon money out of those systems into something with exposure to Bitcoin. So I think it's just a good way for them to have that. And it just kind of is a Trojan horse for just to suck out money from there into something that has exposure. I just wonder when it comes to the freedom aspect that Bitcoin truly is, like, how do you know unless you have... Because there's so much in the background. There's, you know, people want to have proof of reserves. But then if you have a lot of liabilities,
sure.
What if they don't have the amount of Bitcoin they say they've been accumulating? And then people want to have a bank run on the Bitcoin and it's not there because, you know, you technically don't own the Bitcoin.
FTX.
So there's that. I think that it's something that if you want to exist as a company in the future, you need Bitcoin. So
I agree with that 1,000%. But let me tell you the Bob Burnett going public story, which, so when I first met Bob, I knew nothing about him. And I don't know what you know about him, but he was the CTO of Gateway Computers. back in the 90s. He was on the team that built the first laptop computer with Zenith. So he was a programmer and a developer. And there was a time where, at that time, people did not think they needed personal home computers. Like, that wasn't going to be necessary. We have computers for everything. So you're looking at an adoption curve that he understands. And he has seen this. So, like, when I met him and I realized what his background was and what he had seen, I was fascinated. I'm like, I want to hear everything you have to say. So one of the stories that he told that just, like, knocked me off my horse was that about taking Gateway public. And I didn't know anything about that. I don't know anything about companies going public. So back at that time, it still took a few years. Like, now you can go public in like 6 months. Then it was like you had to prove that your product was solid. You had to do like a road show. You had to go all over and do this stuff and convince people that your company was worthy of that. So once they became worthy of that and they went public, everything changed. And all of a sudden, their mission and everything they were doing had to do with their profits and stockholders, period. That's it. So they hated that. He did, the original founder did. They ended up getting a new group. They retired and got a new group to run it. So Bob tells the story of getting a call one night, and it was the former, you know, founder of Gateway, and said, "Bob, I need you in San Diego tomorrow morning." Bob's like, "Why?" He's like, "I just need you there." And he's like, "Okay." So Bob shows up, and the vision in my mind is like the offices are trashed. There's like they've been playing beer pong. But it was like the almost like they spent all the money on cocaine and hookers. I mean, that's like, that's not what he said, but that is the impression that you get when you're listening to the story, is that everything gets destroyed. They take the money, they prove, like they used to look at your shipping even. They were shipping bricks in boxes to try to prove shipment of, you know, computers to keep the stock price up. Well, they obviously had to let them go, and they had to come back in and try to recover, and finally got it to the point where Acer bought them. And they were both done. But he was disgusted by that, just disgusted.
Wow.
And what he realized, and so now I'm going to take you into the publicly traded Bitcoin mining companies. And that is where I started to get that same feeling. You know, Bob's like, they're not looking out for the best, you know, the miner is the person who's protecting the Bitcoin, the base layer of Bitcoin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not if you're a public company or not, you're protecting your shareholder. So you
right.
don't a rip what?
Yeah, incentives matter.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So I am not sure any Bitcoin public company is a good idea, because you're not in it for Bitcoin anymore. You know, maybe you started that way, but like the miners, now everyone thinks that, well, why Bitcoin's up? Why aren't the miners up? Well, I don't know. Gee, the thousands of acres of equipment and miles of, you know, trucks and staff and like people fixing these little machines, and just like, this is an expensive process. I mean, this is not cheap. And like, according to Bob, I heard on the last episode that we just recorded, he was saying that right now it costs about $90,000 to mine a Bitcoin. So $90,000 is a good place for us to drop to before we get bumped up again, because it happens. Like, it goes down to that point of where, what it costs them. But how are they paying for all of this with just Bitcoin. You know what I mean? Just mining Bitcoin. Your electricity alone, not to mention your staff and your facilities and all of the things that it takes to run this mining business. My question is, are any of them profitable? Because I think they're borrowing money. They're using their stock as an ATM. So that's the benefit of going public. And so they can borrow from it. And that is the only thing that you've got as a public company, is being able to use your stock to borrow more.
And that's why it's all crazy, because, yeah, the people that you're selling shares to are buying something that doesn't yet exist. It's like more of the debt-based system. It's like this race. But at the same time, that's what makes you think that whoever over-leverages or whoever gets too greedy, it's like Bitcoin will expose that. And I think the companies that are doing
so.
Yes.
I guess it's not fair to say that everybody should be on a Bitcoin standard or feel that they have to protect the base layer of Bitcoin. I mean, why do we think that? Because I think we get it and we understand how important it is, where maybe there are other people who are just, you know, I can make a business out of this now. It always seemed like it might make sense to me that somebody like BlackRock, who with their IBIT, they've got to have so much Bitcoin. Anybody buys a Bitcoin, so do they. Anybody sells it, so do they. So they have to do that. Wouldn't it make sense to mine your own Bitcoin, to have that on hand and get it at a better price even? You know, you're getting a little bit of a price discount if you did it right. See, I've always kind of thought that could be the direction it goes in, where like BlackRock could buy some of these miners and then literally use those facilities to mine their own Bitcoin. And
one thing I wonder is, I've heard about some people who are working with AI and they're building warehouses powered by nuclear energy to host giant server farms for AI and technology. So I just wonder how long before the mining farms, either powered by solar or wind or nuclear, will cause them to have these margins increase for the shareholders, so they can, you know what I mean? Like, they'll have to turn to some other form of energy.
You're going to have free energy.
Yeah, if it's already happening in the AI space, why wouldn't it be happening in the Bitcoin space, where they're looking for these alternative methods?
AI has to run 24/7. And the only reward that anyone gets out of that is, well, you get paid. So Google's paying you, Facebook is paying you. You know, they're paying you to keep their servers up 24/7. So they get that out of it. But where I feel like if you're mining Bitcoin, it's different, you know, because you can help out the electric companies, you can curtail when you need to, and you still get Bitcoin as a bonus on that. So I don't know. Yeah, I would rather mine Bitcoin, of course, but that's just me. But I can see the combo that they're starting. You know, I just heard CleanSpark is going AI. They have to.
Oh, really?
I think they're going to go out of business if they, I don't mean just CleanSpark, but I think a lot of these big companies, like the one that went down first, that filed for bankruptcy first, and I can't remember the name. But they came out of bankruptcy pretty well, and they headed pretty quickly into the AI direction, knowing they were going to need that.
Mining companies?
So, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how many head into the nuclear direction.
I don't know. Because I don't know how it works. I don't know. Like, I know there are regulations around that are pretty huge. And to get around that,
right,
it's huge.
But you think, I wonder, like, the amount of power Bitcoin uses versus AI. I think Bitcoin is bigger, but I don't know. I'm not 100. I don't know about that. I know Bitcoin's network is humongous globally, but I don't know how it compares to AI. But I think if it's anything that's using such an immense amount of power, you're going to try to lower your costs and do something. So I just think if it's happening, which I know what's happening in AI, it's got to be on the horizon.
I'm curious, who controls nuclear? Who controls that? And who allows?
I wonder.
You know,
and like, I don't want to say names, but I know it's somebody in real life, whether it's their job that has to do with this is the project they're working on.
Okay. Well, I think that needs to be an interview soon. So you can ask questions on that. Because I know there was just one thing I heard about it was the regulations on it are so tight. Because obviously you can do a lot of damage with any of that. So it's like you have to be qualified. You have to be.
That's why I was surprised when I heard this news.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's definitely something that really sparked my interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because this is their career. This is their job. And it's, you know, it's somebody, yeah, it's a real life connection that I heard about this from. And it really got me thinking about Bitcoin. Because if this is something in the works right now with AI servers and nuclear energy, then I just wonder where that's heading in the Bitcoin space.
The other part is like when you look at the amount of energy use, like in 10 years, we're going to need double what we have now. So there has to be more energy, and it has to come from an affordable place. And
right.
I know.
And that's why when you were talking about CleanSpark or whoever it was that went out of business and had to turn to AI, you just wonder how many are on the verge of, hey, I need to make a decision here. And if there's an alternative energy solution, we're going to go with that. And if there's anybody, let's say, like you were talking about BlackRock, why wouldn't I mine the Bitcoin or have access to that? Wouldn't they be able to shift the regulations in their favor to make it so that
they can...
You would hope, you know, so yeah, I just wonder about
that. I don't know about the nuclear part. That's the questions I have. It's like, okay, legally, and how does that work? How do you get involved in that?
I know. I'd like to know that too. That's definitely something that
I
literally just a few days ago, it sparked my interest. And I think that's the next rabbit hole I want to go down.
Yeah,
for sure.
Somebody told me, come to think of it, that you could make some kind of nuclear device that's maybe this big around, and it like even almost like a stool size, like a barrel, you know, like think of it like a barrel, and like that kind of nuclear could power a ridiculous amount. And I'm like, okay, well, where do we get those barrels and how do we make those?
I mean, all I'm thinking of is the sci-fi version of like, you know,
Walking Dead without the zombies.
I'm thinking of like, no, Iron Man with his core, you know.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. Now, I'll say when I had taken on the Bitcoin Alaska conference, and I don't know if you read any of that, it turned into a disaster. However, what I will say about it, I believed that Alaska had the potential to be the state with the energy needed to do this. And no, there are some quiet things going on up there. I know one of, let's see, there will be a mining facility there that opens up that will be bigger than ones in Texas. It'll be like the biggest one, and it's up on the North Slope, it's called, out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. And I know it's coming together, and it's been coming together. They did a pre-testing of a smaller version of it that went really well. The other thing about Alaska is that hydro is huge and thermal is huge. But, you know, what I also realized about it was the laws and the legalities of every state are absurd. They're all absurd. Like, there's something crazy about all of them. So it's like the people in Alaska could literally get their heat paid for. You know, they get those heat punks up there, the guys from Space Denver, and those guys can turn your whole house into being heated by Bitcoin, and it's going to at least cut your bill in half, if not more. So like, that was something about Alaska too, that like had the potential, and people were so like it was the one place that people were not, they didn't look at you like you had horns coming out of your ear, you know, like something was wrong with you because you talked about Bitcoin. Like I met three other women in their 50s who all have Bitcoin. And that's crazy.
Yeah. Okay.
I haven't met three women.
That's not common.
Yeah, that are my age, you know, and like, I don't know if you know this, but like the 50 to 55 year old white woman is the lowest demographic of Bitcoin ownership.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? So like find three other women there. One of them started like the Juno Bitcoin meetup. Then the others followed. And I'm very excited because they're coming to BitBlock Boom and April, they're going to come down. And so it's exciting that they're going to be there. So,
you know what I think would be an interesting angle, which would just be crazy to probably not something you would ever do on your show, but
you never know. Tell me.
I just think an interesting angle would be, you know, because I've heard something about how the boomers are the most gullible generation. And I know. Because of technology, right? So you have all these videos coming out in AI and people just believe the media, you know what I mean? The media is just something that you're used to, you know, the extreme polarization that happens in the world these days and from social media, especially. I think people believe that stuff is so true and they get so sucked into like identity politics and these things. But I think that they're fed such an algorithm that I've had people in my life who will send me a video that's obviously Sora generated and think it's real. And I think it would be an interesting segment to like kind of be like, hey, you want to see how we can, you know, how like Bitcoin breaks down ideals that you thought were real and you realize, oh my God, that was not true or that was not real. I think sometimes like exposing that, like, almost like something you really believed we can debunk and be like, that's something you thought was real, but it's
that's a good one. Debunking
beliefs that people have.
Boomer belief
could be like an orange pill, because once you realize these beliefs break down that you were lied to or you thought something was real and it isn't, is a really great way to kind of take the road to Bitcoin. Because once you first break down that something that you really thought.
Did you know that boomers control 50% of the wealth in this country?
Yeah, I didn't know it was that much.
Yeah. And Gen X behind it is 30%. So you've got 80% of this country's wealth is in 50 and up. So if we could get 1% of that in Bitcoin, change everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's so, you know, the boomers grew up in this way where they believed in the institutions and the things they were lied to about. There was a way of doing things. But I have learned a few interesting tidbits about boomers. They are extremely good at checking out their bank balance and their finances online. It's the first thing they do every day. They like Facebook and they like YouTube. Those are the two biggies.
But Facebook, I found, is such a, like the reels or the videos on Facebook are so algorithm heavy.
Yeah, kill me.
Clickbaity type.
I started a rumor page over there and it's the last place I go. But it's also where I know the most boomers exist. So I'm really trying to keep
it going. If you could get in that algorithm loop.
Yeah.
That would be big because I know that that's a really big place that people spend their time on.
Huge. So it's like I'm trying to get there and you know, push that content out. And like, you know, Gary's on there, his wife's on there, like their friends are there. And these are not the same. They're not on X. No, my family is not on X. Nobody is.
I don't think that. You're right. I think if you want to reach certain people, you have to go where they spend more of their time. Yep. And that is Facebook.
And it's painful. Painful as hell.
But that's, yeah, you got to get it to the right demographic, the right people that would see it. So that's a really great idea.
Yeah. So that's been my next goal, is now that we've finally got some content coming out. And you know, like the first episode got over 20,000 views on, which I thought was huge, really.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And so I think that's really exciting. Do you ever find yourself like having to, do you put together like structure an episode ahead of time?
Like, I have ideas. I find that the best thing to do is kind of find the guests' interests, what they've been building, what they're into, but sort of just kind of build like a layout of ideas or maybe certain thoughts I have about mm-hmm. a topic. Most of the time I find the conversation is better when it kind of just naturally directs itself different ways. But then I most of the time never refer back to my notes, but it helps when I take those notes because I know what ideas I want to touch on. And then it naturally kind of like, because you wrote it down, your mind will remember it as the conversation comes up. So it feels more natural when you touch back on the ideas you thought you were going to talk about. Right. So that's what I found is most helpful.
You know, my thought too is like, a couple of them don't live too far from me. I'm just going to like show up at the front door with my little video camera. Hello. Can I come in? And just, you know, I'm thinking there's so many things I can do. And what I'm looking for is that trust. Like, I want other people to see that these guys don't need Bitcoin for a thing, but they get it. They're early adopters. And like, those are the people that I feel like others can listen to.
Yeah, you're right. Because I think when they see that somebody isn't successful and then they get Bitcoin, they might think that this person's gambling on something.
That's
that they
right.
You know?
Yep.
And I don't trust that because it's somebody who knows nothing. They haven't gotten anywhere in life. Why would I trust them?
Exactly.
Even though that's, you know, really the answer. But yeah. I think when you go to somebody who has done well, they will take those people's advice. You're right.
Yeah. And I think it like makes them go, wait a minute, if they would do that, they don't even have to do that. So like if I did it, maybe that helps.
You're right. I think that's a really great way to get to them.
If those people can also, they have to be able to back it up. And these are the guys who can. They can back it up. And I feel
people
like...
people are very, they want proof in a certain way. They want proof of results. They don't trust that this thing is going to work. They don't want it. Maybe they don't want to take the time to learn a new technology, some of them, or learn why it's great, but they will trust somebody who has been successful.
Right, right. And like, I was talking to him about it. And again, like, he did not understand the halving. He didn't understand, like, how do we know? There could already be 21 million Bitcoin out there. We don't know. I'm like, yeah, we do. And here's how we know. It's mathematics and cryptography. Okay. This isn't like a, it's not.
What's crazy is like, I've seen like videos that my mom understands Bitcoin because she understands for me. But one thing that she still does send me videos once in a while, Facebook videos, and it'll be like a video that I'm like, Mom, like it'll still be one of those videos that gets her thinking. And I wonder if a lot of people, if I hate to say you want to sound clickbaity, but like if it's one of those videos, it's like, this is what changed my, or like, this is like, I've done well all my life and this is what I do. And like, almost like kind of like, I don't want to say it's kind of sounds like an infomercial, but also sounds a little clickbaity, but also like, listen till the end and you'll find out the secret to this, you know? And I feel like that's kind of how these videos sound to me. And then one of them actually mentioned, you know, XRP. And I go, Mom.
God, kill me.
I go, Mom, if you don't get it by now, I don't even know what to say anymore. And then she just like laughed at it. She understood. And she's like, I know, I don't know.
XRP. Banks are going to use it. Everybody thought the banks were going to use it. Why? And then I literally just heard this again like a month ago. Somebody said to me, well, I think the banks are going to use it. I'm like, no, they're not. They're still not. Like in 2017, they were going to do it. I go, do some research. I don't even think they have.
It's weird because it's like, I think that's what they listen to, even though they, like my mom understands, but it's like, that's what they still will get sucked into that algorithm where it's like, I've done very well in life and this is what I do. It's almost like that's the kind of algorithm Facebook likes to feed people.
God. Okay, I see where you're going with that. Let me write that
down. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to make it sound, but that's what they like, I think. That's what my mom sees.
God, you can't believe the way my mom has gotten. I think part of her becoming a bitter old woman is Facebook. It's the worst.
Yeah, because it's so polarizing
on people. Like, she's not that kind of person. She never has. She's way too classy to ever, you know, get involved. But on Facebook, she will. All day. Why?
It's ridiculous. I think it really does because they know how to engage that dopamine in you, and they know how to get you to want to stay sucked in and watch the next video because it knows what kind of content. You know, so if you get in that algorithm loop for them somehow, like, it would be, you'd reach a lot of people.
It's a good point.
But yeah, it's somehow.
I wonder if they're going to like George Bodine when he yells, "I am a hardcore Bitcoin maxi with balls the size of watermelons, and I'm here to stay." Like, I'm wondering, do they want to hear that? Because first clip is coming, and it's.
I honestly think they would, because you know what? I think boomers grew up in a different time. Boomers grew up in a time where they could say whatever, and nobody, you know. So I think hearing real, would
believe it.
Something. Yeah,
I believe every word the man says. I do not think he's bullshitting anybody. I think he is. And then I also think the fact that he's not worried about anything now, like that he can just enjoy life and do all of that, makes him more interesting. And like George, he's not maybe he is very wealthy. I don't know. But he doesn't have that. Like the other three have a very open, you know, sense of what the money they've made and stuff. Him, on the other hand, you know, he went in the service and he did all this stuff. And, you know, I don't know if he's just a Bitcoiner and an artist and he's come across that later. But so he's the kind of guy, too. He's more normal. Like he's got that military background. He's got other things that I wanted people to see. And like Cardone. Cardone is fascinating because a couple months ago, caught him in his spaces. Now, I remember when Cardone first got started and he was at Bitcoin Day Naples and he kept bitching about how everybody talked about Bitcoin. And I finally raised my hand and he'll probably, if I tell him it was me, he'll remember it. I may not ever tell him, but I did raise my hand and said, excuse me, Gary, do you know that Bitcoin does not have a PR department? Like, I'm sorry, they're not talking the way you want them to talk about it. But if you have a message that you want to send, well, you are the kind of guy that has the following, that has the voice. Teach them what to say then. Stop bitching about what they are saying and teach them what to say.
Yeah. And yeah, we're all like, there is no actual department, right? But we could all be a voice.
Right.
You know, and that's, so, yeah.
Don't bitch about what they are saying. Try to help them along to say something that makes more sense.
Right. That's so true.
And then, like, I heard him talking about nodes and like knots versus core. And man, he came in and he asked it like question. Anybody that like got into his shit, he's like, you know, to hell with you, I don't care what you think, you finish telling me what you were telling me. And so like he was really interested and he's like, hey, I've got 1,000 Bitcoin, why can't I have my own servers or my own nodes? Why can't I hire some core developers? Why can't I? And I thought all of those were really good questions. And is that possible? You know, is it? And who else is asking that? Nobody. So I wanted to hear from him because, like, you could just see his evolution from, like, just figuring out Bitcoin to today. He's still got great questions and he's not afraid to ask them. Bob is the one who has that mathematical, cryptological mind. And, like, he started mining his whole... like entry to Bitcoin was somebody called him and wanted him to build Ethereum servers. and pay him a big bunch of money to do it. Well, he had no idea what it was. So he's like, sure, why not? So he said, once he had gotten into building these, he said, then I started to look at the tech and he's like, I couldn't get there. Couldn't get to it. So I decided how, and then he goes, then I looked at Bitcoin and I got there. I got there like that. So it was like the Ethereum mining was what turned him into realizing that Ethereum is not for him, but Bitcoin was for him. And so like he can answer those questions because he knows all of that technical, you know, little bits of it and whether or not it'll work.
Right. Yeah. You have to have that critical thinking that they have.
Yeah. And, you know, the day that I met Bob, I thought, here's a guy that has more experience than anyone in this space, business-wise, Wall Street-wise, and no one's listening to him. Nobody understands what his background is. So that's been another mission since the day I met him. Was like, okay, you guys are going to start listening to this guy because he knows what he said, gets it.
Right.
And
yeah. I think it'd be interesting if people like him connected to, you know, like you and Gary, how they have those questions. It's good to have people ask questions and have critical thinking in any space. But Secure Sovereign was the one that was talking about this, and he is a developer. And he owns BitVault or built BitVault and
BitVault,
V-A-U-L-T. Yeah. He works in like the strategy building. I forget what the name of something. I forgot what it's called. The area. Yeah, but he's very, very, very smart. Secure Sovereign. Yeah, that's what he goes by. But he's had these questions, and I think that, you know, you can get attacked for thinking different in Bitcoin, but I always think it's good to just ask, what if, you know, and would this be good? And if it wouldn't create a fork, then anything is stronger for Bitcoin. I think all these things, diversification in every form, I think is strength for Bitcoin. Yeah.
Well,
diversification in thinking, diversification in people just asking these questions. Oh,
right.
And figuring
that's the other thing. It's like for everyone to think the boomers have made this happen. It's absurd. Okay. The boomers were born into this. The government made this happen.
Yeah.
They were just the beneficiaries of it. It's not their fault that life was good and that they just assumed it would continue that way for everyone.
And even out of the 50% who have most of the wealth, it's not like out of the 50% of the wealth that they have, it doesn't mean that 50% of all boomers have that wealth.
Exactly.
Like, small percentage of that 50% of wealth could hold it.
You're very right. I mean,
it doesn't mean that they all benefited from this train. You know, some got lucky, some did the right things, some made the right moves.
Yeah.
But it's not that they all, the government screwed over a lot of people.
It was like more of a family time. And there was like my mom, that's one thing you could say about my mom was that her parents and her brother and sister, like that was everything. Their family was everything. That white picket fence, you know, that was the life. And so you didn't have to be rich, but one parent could stay home, the other could work. And, you know, my grandparents, my grandfather became a minister in his 40s. And so, like, they died with nothing. We're happy.
Yeah.
Because they did what they wanted to do. And that was like my grandfather was the kind of pastor that would go into a hospital and talk to people and pray with people. And like that was
And that's
what
the
he
thing.
Wanted.
That's freedom right there to have the time to do what you want to do. You don't have to have everything in the world object wise. But you can have free time and you could do the things you want. And you're not forced to do something you don't want to do. That's like free will. And that's happiness, you know. I think that's.
And they had enough to make that happen. You know, they had enough to make it so that they, because ministers don't get paid a lot of money, they had enough to go there, you know, and he could go to school, he went to seminary, and then he did that. And I think that his whole thing in life was faith. You know, you have to have faith. And I'm sorry, Bump, but my faith is in Bitcoin. It has given me faith. That better life is possible. Better life is possible for us. Better life is possible for my children. if I had never seen that, I don't know where I'd be today.
I agree. I agree with that because it's if Bitcoin is the truth, because we can verify it and don't trust verify, but it's the truth, it is the way forward, and it gives us a life to look forward to. It's definitely all these things that I mean, you really feel like that is what deception versus truth and hope versus despair. It's literally the the way. So we need to show people the way. So I think what you're doing is incredible. What you're doing to show people the way, a good portion of the people who would make an impact in a certain demographic who do need this and who would benefit from this, and you're finding a right way to connect with them. And I really appreciate what you're doing in Bitcoin because you care about these people and their families. And that's why we do
I
any of
do.
this. We do this because we care and we want more people to
I mean,
find that
listen,
way.
I come from nothing. Zero. Okay? Zero. So I'm not a rich Bitcoiner. I am not any of those things. I still work really hard. However, like I said, this gives me hope. It gives me hope for the future, and I see it. It's like you can see it so crystal clear down the line. And I want more people to get there and go, holy smoke. And I just think it's that whole thing like the internet. The internet was made for drugs and crime. And like that's what it was like in 2000, in 1999. It was still like you, or no, it was earlier than that. I was going to say I had my first home computer in 95. Oh, but even then, people are like, you have a computer? I'm
I
like, hell
know.
yeah, I do. Like, I have a computer. In 1987, I was in the computer lab at high school. Like, you had to go to this other facility if you wanted to use a computer. But I did. I wanted in, and I wanted to know everything. So, I think
I
that I'm
mean, yeah,
lucky
we
that I
grew up
was
at
an
that
early
time when we saw the
adopter,
transition,
and I
and
wouldn't have even been in. So, yeah.
that's amazing.
And hey, how about this Bitcoin army? What the hell? How long have you been in the Bitcoin army? And like, how long has it existed?
So the Bitcoin Army has existed since December of 2024. So we're coming up on a year now.
Wow.
I've been in there since before it was created. So me and the initial group of friends that were connecting on X, commenting on each other's posts, we were just trying to find ways to engage with other Bitcoiners. And we were pretty much, we call it like tweeting into the void is what we were doing before. Nobody ever saw any of our thoughts. We were just kind of journaling on our own. When we saw like a big account post something, we would look through the comments and see who said something interesting, and we would comment back. And it was like lighting a fire between each other, and we're like, wow, somebody saw my stuff. Somebody actually cared about my thought. So
Amazing.
we actually started making like friends that way. Yeah, we started a like a group chat on the side. So we actually grew in the background as far as commenting and actually connecting, on the side. And then we started the community and just started to empower people, look out for people that we thought had interesting things to say.
I love that. I listen. I think what you guys are doing is like I'm thrilled to be there and I'm thrilled to have found
That's
it.
amazing.
And there is so like I've been tweeting into the void for way too long. So it is so nice to like meet new people who care and are also interested and it's like a new flow of initiatives and people who will get out there and help and make this happen. So
It
I am
feels like
really
the
pumped
next
to have found
wave
you.
of. Thank you. I'm so glad you're part of it. It does feel, because it feels like there was like the OGs in Bitcoin that everyone knew, and then it feels like another wave of people coming out that actually because people get they get too big and too popular and they can't pay attention to everybody. That makes sense. But when you get the next wave of people, it's just amazing to see that now I'm having a Bitcoin Army meetup because it just kind of happened this way. I know a lot of other Bitcoin Army members are trying to do meetups in their locations just to say, hey, it's a Bitcoin Army thing. But we're putting it on the Orange Pill app. We're trying to get, it doesn't have to be Bitcoin Army members only. It could be anyone who's a Bitcoiner. Come on over. We want to meet you. But just knowing that one of our friends wanted to come out to visit Chicago, we thought, well, are there any Bitcoin meetups going on? Why don't we have our own? And then now we're so far, I think it's coming up this weekend, and we're having at least like 20, 25 people coming in. And I'm amazed because, you know, going from a place where less than a year ago, I had no friends on X, I had no Bitcoiners that I knew of in real life. And then now, less than a year later, we're hosting something. There's people flying here during this government shutdown where the flights are so expensive. There's people paying like thousands of like $1,000 to come here. People are driving 6 hours away to come here. They're driving from Milwaukee, Indiana, you know, so it's like amazing to me that in the real world, being a Bitcoiner, sometimes you feel so separated because you're trying to teach, but you just feel like you already know this truth that people just don't see yet. And I have a hard time getting people who live near me to do anything. It's like pulling teeth. But when you host a Bitcoin meetup and you have people that are finding a way to get there, it really is mind blowing. Like, I can't believe it.
Have you ever heard of the Vintage Garage?
No.
Okay. I owned that, and it happened in downtown Chicago it was about 15 years. And right out of the gate, when I figured out Bitcoin, I thought, oh, they're all going to get into this. Everyone, all these dealers are going to get into this. One person over all those years, 87-year-old Mary, said, you're going to help me buy some Bitcoin. She comes up to my town, and I helped her buy $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. And she was the only one that would call me over at the show and be like, hey, what's Bitcoin doing? And like her and I would sit in the van, and we would sit in her van and talk about it and get, you know, all excited about it. And I helped her buy like $1,000 worth when it was like 33. I just thought, why is she interested? Mm-hmm. Why did she get this? And she's one of the smartest people that I knew. Like, she understood research.
Because she had you to help her. Maybe if she didn't have you to help her, she would have thought about it and walked away.
Maybe. But you know what? Not one other person in all that time, 100 vendors every month and 2,000 customers. No one ever even asked. So now I do a booth down here in Miami and I sell vintage stuff. And I have a sign that says 25% off you pay in Bitcoin. F's pointing, laughing. It's crazy.
Wow.
I don't get it. It's so weird. Like,
insanity.
Maybe they just think it's like Apple stock. I don't know.
That's crazy.
But I don't understand. Like, yeah, it's insane. But the point I wanted to make, though, is when it's time for Miami meetup, I'll get down here and I'm going to make something happen, and I'm going to make it free and cheap. You know, so like so many places we can just go hang out. We can have a whole beach day. That's, you know, like we don't have to go rent a convention center.
There's
so much we could do. And let me know when you guys are ready for that.
Yeah, that's amazing. I know that somebody was mentioning something about late July next year. She's in Orlando, so I don't know how far.
I was going to say, July is hot.
Yes, but I know.
Like May, perfect.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that sounds amazing. I love these Bitcoin meetups. I think it's incredible. I know that you would have come to this one if you could have, but I think you're traveling.
It's been a long time. I used to go to the Strike one. In fact, I have a video that I'm going to bring out of me pretending I work at Strike, sitting at their desk. Like when someone comes in, I'm like, hello, how may I help you? I'm like,
I love it. Please share it with me. That's amazing.
I loved it. It was so funny. I'm such a Jack fangirl that
me too. Yeah. I mean, we all love him. He's just.
Yes. He's the best. I'll see if I can get a message to him about your meetup.
Oh, that would be amazing.
In Chicago, that's where the meetup was always at, was at Strike.
Wow.
So they still might have BitDucks there. So, yeah.
That'd be so cool. Yeah. If you could get a message and send me that video.
Well, I can do that.
But yeah, he is such a down-to-earth, he looks like he's so, like,
he's
he would be totally chill. Like, it would be amazing. So,
he once said, hey, Mel. To me at BitBlock Boom, and I almost passed out and died. Like, how does he know my name? Like, wow.
That's amazing.
What a guy. I love that. Yeah, I'll see if I can get a message to him about it. Just let him know.
Thank you so much, Mel.
Sure.
I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. And this was such a great talk. And
yes, thank you.
I love the Bitcoin Army.
Thank you so much. Yes. And we're so happy to have you in the Army and just, you know, just being part of the voidless. I mean, not, is it voidless is the right word? But yeah, no more voids. Yeah. And actually making connections. And I hope that the next time we have one here, you could come. And I'm looking forward to, you know, a Miami one. That'd be amazing.
Sounds awesome.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks for having
Take
me.
Take care.
See you soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.